They are elected by you. I am elected by you. I'm constrained as they are constrained by a system that our founders put in place.
The founders separated power because they knew it was the best way to protect our citizens.
Keep your eye on the ball. Structure is destiny.
This is Necessary and Proper, the podcast of the Federal Society's Article 1 initiative. All views expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Federal Society. Hello, this is Nate Kaczmarek. Thank you for listening to the Necessary and Proper podcast. Recently, we were saddened to learn of the passing of a great statesman and friend to the Article 1 initiative, Senator Tom Coburn. In this episode, we bring you some highlights from a panel he participated in at the Federal Society's 2015 National Lawyers Convention. The panel was titled, Agency Rule: How Congress Can Reclaim Its Legislative Authority. We hope you enjoy Senator Coburn's remarks and welcome your feedback on this episode and all of our Article 1 programming at articlei@fedsoc.org.
Well, since I'm the only doctor on the panel that's of a medical training rather than legal training, I will stay here. Usually I'm the person that passes out Prozac after we have a speech, but I'm already depressed from what I've heard. I will just share with you shortly my insight on what I've heard. We heard you can't treat the symptoms, you gotta treat the disease. And I think that's right. But I think the disease is a whole lot different than what we've heard today. The disease is a decline in the recognition of where our freedom comes from, inside Congress. The disease is the failure of human nature to put others ahead of yourself for a higher good. The disease is lack of leadership of people who will call you to a higher purpose so that you can accomplish greater things. So I agree. We have to treat the disease and not the symptoms. The disease is, and many have called me naive through my life. I like that. I am naive. I actually believe we can cheat history in our country. But I don't think we're going to do it through more regulations in the Congress. I think it has to change who we send to Congress and what they're made of. I'm impressed that the vast majority of the Senate has never had a job outside of politics. That certainly doesn't make them bad individuals, but they certainly don't have any broad view of things or a spectrum. And spent 16 years in the belly of the beast, what I saw was rationalization and expediency rather than courage and honor. And I'm not talking about any one party. And so a lot of the recommendations, I agree. The first 2 years I was in the Senate, I had 46 oversight hearings. We passed the law that said the GAO had to report duplication and waste. There's $400 billion of it every year. I left the Senate early, Your Honor, because I was frustrated that nobody wanted to help do anything about it. And the rationalization of the politicians was, well, the big problem is really just the entitlement programs. There's nothing wrong with all the rest of this. All the rest of this is one of the reasons that we're bankrupt as a nation. And I would say our politics is bankrupt because our long-term viewpoint is about the next election, not the next generation. And as seen in this administration, you see the rule of men instead of the rule of law. And so I think we tread on, and I'd mention one third thing, and then I'll be quiet. We're at a turning point in our nation. I've been in 26 states this year. There is about to be a major cultural shift in the foundation and the moorings of our country, and that's the millennial generation. They don't understand liberty. They have no knowledge of our history or the sacrifices. When Pew Research looks at them, 68% don't trust the federal government, but almost 60% want more of it. That's the definition of schizophrenia. So I think we're really at risk, and I think we have to get much, much sicker before we're going to get better. I think the American people are wildly smart and intelligent as a group. And I think they don't get good representations for the people that they elect. And that's a pretty dour, cynical viewpoint. But I've seen it up close and personal. And I've heard the people say privately, you're right, but you know, it might affect my election. I'm not going to do that. What is that about? And the Madisonian, you know, I use Madisonian principles. I block more bills than anybody could say based on Article 1, Section 8, even as interpreted by the Supreme Court. And those that really wanted to get something done would compromise and we'd pass a bill. Those that didn't want to get something done, they just complain about somebody blocking their bill. So I think we have a long way to go. I think we're at great risk. And I think there are some things Congress can do, but the number one thing we have to have is new good leadership. And maybe Paul Ryan's that answer in the House, but I think we have a long way to go until we meet the potentials that we all aspire for and we ensure the freedom that has been paid for before us. You know, mine was not to be critical of the suggestions that you made.
No, I know.
I'm just saying, there's a real absence. There's a real hole. And I'm not talking about the leadership inside the institution. I'm talking about the members. I mean, this is my paraphrase of Martin Luther King. Cowardice asks the question, is it expedient? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? Well, I think there's a lack of conscience, public and personal, that pervades Congress and in both parties, because the number one thing is the team of the party, not the team of America, not the team of our country, not the team of our future, not the team of our kid. And that's normal human behavior, but somehow this country for 150 to 160 years had statesmen that would deny that one human degradation and defect and stand against that to make a difference. And that's what we don't see today. There's exceptions to that, but that's what we don't see today. And so my frustration, the reason I left, is I wanted to go try to do something different. And I love Article 5. If you all want to help me do that, that'd be great too. But I think that's the answer, because I want to scare the hell out of Congress. If we get close to 32, 33 states that have made application under Article 5, they're going to start doing what their oath says they'll do, instead of run for re-election all the time.
Yeah, I wonder, I have a question. I wonder if you would agree that one of the distortions as a result of the current system is that when anything happens that's controversial and people take sides, that the aim is not at Congress, but at the agency that implemented it. We hear criticism of EPA, we hear criticism of the NLRB, and so on and so forth. When in fact, most of the time, they're operating within these very broad delegations of authority that Congress has given them. And so the current system in legislation is a method for Congress to evade its responsibility and not take blame for mistakes that are made. And I wonder if that's been your experience.
I think that's true to an extent, but I think the other big problem with Congress is it's lazy. You can know the answers to what you need to know in legislation if you want to work at it. You know, we have plenty of money in a Senate office. I didn't spend all my money on constituent service. I had some of the best staff in Washington, and they weren't the highest paid, and we turned back almost $1 million every year. So the fact is they don't want to do it because they'd much rather be doing the fun things of politics rather than the sacrificial leadership that's required if you're actually going to make changes that are good for the country in the long term.
You know, I guess I would, the only qualification I would make of that, and I certainly, it resonates with me, everything that was said, but there is a natural limit of what Congress can do with the size of the federal bureaucracy. We have the rise of this fourth branch that is increasingly independent in a way that wasn't anticipated by the framers. And I think it's certainly true that politicians often like it when other people make tough choices. And so they give broad decisions. They don't like making the choices of you get X and you get Y and you get nothing at all. And so they kick that can down the road. But I think we're deluding ourselves. When you look at the size of the fourth branch, it is really impossible for Congress to make a meaningful oversight record with these agencies, certainly at the size that Congress has. I happen to agree that they need to increase the size to have any hope of reviewing these agencies. But I think that what you're seeing, and I think this really touches on what the judge said, is not only is there a tendency to kick the can down the road, let the tough decisions being made by these agencies, but the nature of the issues are changing. I mean, we're not only becoming more of a ministry system as in England, but you look at decisions by agencies and you can see the nature of the questions are changing in a dangerous way. To give you a very small example, the Redskins name is a very good example of that. I mean, here you have a question that is heavily invested with social, political, cultural issues. Who would have thought that a small agency would answer that question, would resolve that question? One that is just an entirely single moving part that's operating on its own, this teeny little board. And I think that's the true danger here. So you have the rise of a fourth branch in a tripartite system that is insulated not only from Congress, it's somewhat insulated from the White House.
My answer to that is, if that's true, we're dead already. If what you just said is true, we're dead already. There is no, what you're saying is we cannot compete with the Fourth Estate to bring it down without adding more money and more people.
No, I think we can. I think we can, but Congress has to be more aggressive.
Right, and so where are you going to get the congressmen that are going to do that? Because the reason you see Donald Trump and Dr. Ben Carson at the head doesn't have anything to do about competency. It has everything to do with trust. And you can lead on hard issues. Our problem is our politicians won't lead on hard issues because they're afraid they won't get reelected. The greatest honor in the world is to lose elections standing on principle. That's the greatest honor. It's not to win one. And what we lack today is the courage of those that came before us. Our politicians are weak today in general, in my opinion. I mean, why would somebody get upset if you really believed in the Constitution and you wanted to stop bills in the Senate based on that? Think about what that says about who's in the Senate. You can have a debate. They wouldn't even debate. I mean, look at the Senate. How much real debate have you seen in the Senate or in committees? Watch C-SPAN. There's not a real Socratic debate. There's an abandonment of what Moynihan said. You can have your opinion, but you can't have your separate facts. You don't even see that. Matter of fact, nobody would debate me when I left the Senate because they didn't want to debate. They wanted to just let the process roll. And so what I say is we need a renovation, not just of the heart, but of the morals that lead to great leadership in this country. And we need to get rather smart about who is in the Senate and who is in the House. And it's not the political nature. And the question is, with the economic time bomb that is in front of us, $142 trillion in unfunded liabilities, by the way, CBO and OMB lie every year about where we are, with what's in front of us, how much time do we have to cheat history? And I want to cheat it. But we're not going to do it with the leadership that we have today across the Senate and across the Congress and in the agencies and in the executive branch and oftentimes in the judicial branch where they take the easy way out rather than taking the hard way.
Okay, we have many people lined up for questioning. I don't know who's first, but...
Hi, I'm Michael Houston. I practice administrative law at Gibson Dunn. Okay. I appreciate the panel's suggestions for how we might reform Congress and for Dr. Coburn's suggestions on how we might change the people in Congress. I'm curious if you all think that's really where we should devote our resources, or will real change only come when we focus on electing a chief executive who is committed to a much more limited constitutional role for the executive branch? Do we need to make the administrative state an issue in this upcoming presidential election and all future presidential elections? And if so, how do we do that? Thank you.
Well, there's a role for everybody in this business. We live, for good or ill, in a presidential nation. This is one of the consequences of the Progressive Revolution. Only presidents at the, at the moment can define an issue of national scope, and you absolutely need that. As Chris well knows, when President Reagan ran for president in 1980, regulatory reform was one of his targets, and there was a group of us who worked systematically on this. I don't think any of us thought it would be a magic wand, but boy, it did some good. We slowed the rate of production of regulations. That curve flattened out. It didn't do everything we wanted to do, and we certainly needed more. But at the time, it was an interesting way to address the issue, and it's one that was very close to the president-elect's heart, to the candidate's heart. So it's not impossible. I think there's all sorts of things presidential candidates could do. Some of us have kicked around the idea of, aside from Mr. Trump's crudity, I mean, his instinct is ferret-like, and it's interesting. And he certainly got public attention on it. But there's all sorts of regulations out there that are sitting ducks, and how encouraging it might be for a presidential candidate to say, such and such a regulation, take that god-awful HUD housing rule that would impose diversity criteria on zoning regulations from the federal government with no legislative authority to speak of. Suppose a presidential candidate, there are other targets, I don't mean to emphasize that one, you simply say on January 20th, 2017, that regulation is bye-bye. It will no longer be enforced by my administration. If Congress wants to enact it, let them reenact it. You could take a half a dozen issues of that sort that are hot button issues in the body politic for a conservative Republican type constituency, identify them through the voice of the presidential candidate, and force Congress into this game, but alerting the public to the fact that it knows something already, but here is a particular target for you to focus your anger at. I think that is entirely feasible, and it's a way in which you get the problem of the administrative state roiling the public in a way that's useful and not merely one of venting about what we're not doing, for example, about immigration.
So much of what you all have discussed, and especially you, Senator Coburn, really points out a concern that I've had for quite some time, which is there's a cultural problem here where especially the younger generation doesn't even know what it means to be free. We have people at campuses today fighting against freedom of speech, a fundamental right. And as you've traveled, I'm just curious, aside from getting the right candidate to do the right thing and coalesce a country around the right message, how do you fundamentally get in there and start reteaching this? Are you seeing bright spots across the country where you think that eventually we'll get those leaders back up here, more of them than less of the ones we have now?
Oh, I think the only way you get back there is re-embrace the vision of our founders. They wanted a limited federal government. I mean, think about what Thomas Jefferson said about education. Federal government can't be involved in education without an amendment to the Constitution. We've spent $3 trillion on education since 1976 from the federal government, and 60% of every state's budget of their own money that they've raised is now ruled by federal bureaucracy, and yet there is not one measurement in education that has improved since 1976, and many are worse. So why are we such slow learners? These guys were wise, and they said, you need a limited, you need government where it's closest to the people, you need it where you can have some action. So my hope is that we would actually get aggressive if we want our children to, regardless of the economic consequences that are coming, which is $1 million per household in terms of unfunded liabilities, if we want our children and grandchildren to experience and taste what we've experienced and tasted, what we have to do is re-embrace the very genius of what this country was founded upon, which was a limited government. There's nothing limited about this government. Matter of fact, isn't it ironic that they talk about before the shutdown that only non-essential employees will still be working? Why the hell would we have anything except essential employees? So that's funny, but it's so terribly damaging. You know, the Department of Economic Analysis, just, you know, this is a populist trick, but it's true. Just put out the study on federal employees. The average federal employee makes 72% more than everybody, fully absorbed, than everybody else in the country on average.
Except judges.
Well, we actually need to pay the judges more, certain ones of them anyway. And they make 52% more than state employees. But think about it. Why would we have that disparity in terms of government? When I was growing up, working for the government was service. And now it's elitism. And so we've lost control. The question is how do we, who believe in the fundamental principles of this country, restore it? How do we cheat history? And we're not going to be doing it with the exact same, sending the same farm teams to Washington that have the same moral ethos, which is the other side of it, is, you know, people are embarrassed to talk about faith. Faith is a component of doing the right thing. And knowing the ethics, I had a visit with one of the professors here earlier about who's teaching ethics at the University of Virginia. We don't teach ethics anymore in schools. And it's certainly not being taught at home. And what you see in terms of the media, there's not much there. So how do we do it? We re-embrace the principles that made us great. And we don't rationalize what the real problem is. The real problem is every other republic has failed. That's the problem. And how did they fail? Exactly what we're doing. So why would we keep doing it?
Let's thank Senator Coburn has to leave to catch a flight, but let's thank him for his participation. Well, it's 3:30. I think we're right on time, and thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for listening to Necessary and Proper. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell a friend, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Google Play. To learn more about the Article I initiative, please visit fedsoc.org/articlei. That's fedsoc.org/articlei.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.